There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Mom Struggling Well podcast, the show where we laugh about motherhood and life in general, so we don't just start crying, because sometimes things go terribly, terribly wrong and it's not even 7 a.m. yet. I'm really excited to introduce Joy McMillan to you. She's my guest this week. She is a wife, mom, public speaker, life coach. She does a little bit of everything. She's been called freakishly transparent, which I completely resonate with. There is no faking with Joy, and that's because for years she hid her past and it was destroying her life. So once she started to be honest, she never looked back. You're gonna love all the wise things that she has to say. A couple things before we get started though. If you haven't left a review yet, please go ahead and put that at the top of your to-do list today. It should take about 1 minute. I did want to read a review though from Kelly Newberg. She says she Google searched how to review a podcast just so she could leave a 5-star review. The podcast is that good. During a particularly tumultuous, that's a lot of words. That's a lot of hard words to say. During a particularly tumultuous and isolating time in life and motherhood, this show has been an encouraging light that I needed to help pull me out of darkness. Such a life-giving listen. That makes me so thankful. So yay, Kelly, for listening. Thank you for Googling it. That I remember when I had no idea how to leave a review either. So yes, it's a little confusing. So thank you guys in advance for your kind reviews for the show that helps people find the Mom Struggling Well podcast and hopefully join us in this community. One last thing. I don't know if you've been to the Mom Struggling Well website yet. It's momstrugglingwell.com, but it got overhauled totally by my friend Christine. She was the guest on episode 37. She has a business called Great Oak Circle, and you can find her at greatoakcircle.com. She's a talented graphic designer, you guys. She also does branding. She writes copy and all those other things that me as a nurse has no idea how to do. She has also created free tools to help you work on your own branding and your own copy. So head over to greatoakcircle.com. You're really going to love what you find there. And if you need any help, Christine is fabulous to work with. Okay, let's go ahead and jump in to my episode with Joy. Hey, Joy, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hi, Emily. I'm well, thank you.
So tell me where you're from originally. I can tell.
That I sound weird.
Not weird, different.
Just fun. I was born in South Africa, and then we moved in the midst of the apartheid to Namibia, which is the country northwest of South Africa.
Okay.
And then we moved to the States 20 years ago.
You sound just completely delightful.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. So will you please tell all of us a little bit about yourself? You live in Michigan now, right?
I do. I live in the Mitten State, married to a local boy from the thumb of the Mitten State.
Okay.
And we have two little ones who will be 9 and 7 this summer, which is wild and crazy to think about. And we live in the country. We have chickens. It seems like you have a trend of chicken guests. Is that correct?
Oh, there's a lot of chicken guests. Yes, there are. And I'd have chickens too if it wasn't illegal in my town. So I'm a law-abiding citizen.
You are. Good for you. What else is there to it? My hubby is an officer.
Okay.
Here in Michigan. And I am a graphic designer and a writer and a speaker and a coach.
What do you coach people about?
It's technically life coaching. Okay. That would be the broad umbrella. But my passion would be really coaching women kind of from a place of being stuck with, who am I? I have this thing in me. I don't know what it looks like because it's so buried. How do I get it out?
A gifting?
Yes, like a very much. A passion and a purpose. You know, my sort of the subtitle of Simply Bloom, which is my business, is where passion and purpose collide. Okay. And so I have an obsession with drawing passion and purpose out of women because it's in there. We just often don't see it in ourselves.
Yeah. Okay. So let me back up a second. Life coach. How does one become a life coach? I feel like nobody would want me to coach them in their life based on my life. So how does that work?
You know, I am still only a few years in, so I still feel like I'm finding my feet in it.
Okay.
But our associate pastor's wife had come to me and said, you know, this is something I've just done the training for. I love it. I think that you would enjoy it. I think it's a natural fit for you. And I think I just sort of rolled my eyes and thought, oh, this is one of those things, those new agey things that everybody's doing.
Okay.
And so I explored it. It was actually through a Christian life coaching organization. And as she told me about what the heart of it was, it just seemed like, gosh, I've been doing this for years. Okay. I just didn't know what to call it.
Okay. So are you someone who kind of casts a vision for people? You can kind of see what they can't see in themselves?
That's a lot of it, is that you see things in people. But the unusual thing about coaching that a lot of people don't understand coming into it is they think, okay, I'm going to sit down with you and you're going to do most of the talking. You're going to coach me like a give me a pep talk. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the biggest shifts that I had to make, because I thought, great, I love to talk. You know, my hubby and I have been mentoring for years. We love to do this like download of our wisdom because we're one step ahead of you. And yet coaching is very much me drawing out the gold that's in you. And so you do most of the talking and I just ask strategic questions to help you kind of bring out what you, because you're the expert. You are the expert on your life. Mm-hmm. I am not, you know, and I can bring my opinion and my view and my perspective, but it's you that is an expert on your life. And, you know, I think we see it modeled beautifully in Jesus.
Okay.
Because he asked a lot of questions and it draws out from within someone, you know, something that's really deep that you just can't identify because it's kind of wrapped up in all the other thoughts and all the other insecurities.
Mm. So it sounds like you're a counselor of all the good things.
Sort of. Of course, when we're in there, they say, you're not a counselor, you're not a this, you're not a that. So there's so many things that coaching is clearly not, that I think that when you've done the training, there's always this caution of, well, this is not what coaching is, because we do tend to get lumped into counseling and consulting.
Okay.
You know, and so actually some of my first clients were, there was a level of disappointment because they came expecting something that wasn't coaching and they wanted more consulting. They said, but you've done this and I want to know your experience. And so I had to say, well, that's actually not coaching, that's more consulting. And so I've created sort of a hybrid blend of coaching and consulting because—
Depending on what they want.
Exactly. What the outcome is. So.
Okay. So you are passionate about helping women come out from under shame. And you said that sometimes motherhood drowns out the whisper of our dreams and that it can sometimes undermine the calling of those who are unable to be moms. And as someone who, I've never been pregnant, I have two children by adoption, but I never was able to. So for a long time, I wanted to be a mom and couldn't be a mom. And like you said, the church just elevates that to like the highest thing. And not that there's anything wrong with that. Obviously, being a mom is fantastic. My entire podcast is about motherhood. But what do you do when that's not your identity? Or it shames people, you said, who long for an identity in addition to motherhood.
Right.
So tell me about that journey for yourself.
Yeah. I think that it's a well-meaning thing of, well, motherhood is the noblest thing you could ever do. Mm-hmm. And then when you find yourself at home with little ones going, but there's a part of my soul that feels like it's dying right now.
Yeah, this doesn't feel noble.
No, there's nothing noble about this. You know, there is a sense of shame of feeling like, but I should, you know, it's all the shoulds. Mm-hmm. I should be glorying in this amazing call on my life. And why is it not more natural? I think that was a big struggle for me, was feeling like, why am I not more naturally maternal? And just rising to the occasion and having a ball and all the, not all, they were, especially the vocal blogging moms 8 or 9 years ago, there was this, I can't remember what my life was like before I became a mom. And I remember thinking, I can. Mm. And sometimes I struggle to resent this because it is so hard. Yeah. You know, I have loved being a mom and it is most definitely the most refining thing that I have ever done. But there was a sense of feeling guilty that I wanted to keep a part of my life that was not motherhood alive.
Yes.
But that wasn't celebrated, it seemed, or even encouraged. It was just, you know, be barefoot and pregnant.
Okay.
And that's what, you know, that's what we're called to be as women, especially Christian women.
Okay.
And yet, I don't know if playing small in that in any way honors God. You know, God has so many calls. You know, He has a call in our life and it looks different in different seasons. And so there's definitely a season where we have to put our dreams and our whatever it might be that's been kind of incubating for a while on the back burner because we have to keep little people mm-hmm. alive. But then because we have that kind of that message inundated of this is who you are, mother is all you are, then we forget to pick those back up off of the back burner. And then our kids go off to college and we don't know who we are. And yet if we can actually go through the process of discovering our gifts and our strengths outside of motherhood alongside our kids, I think we actually help draw it out in them.
I love that idea of alongside, like you're including them in the adventure. It's not separate.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So is that something that you, is that what one of your books is about?
Actually, not motherhood.
Okay.
No, the first book was about marriage and intimacy.
Okay. Tell me about that one.
Okay. Actually, you know what? I come to think of what? The second one, while it wasn't about motherhood, it's very much about passion and purpose. So yes, in a sense, but okay. Back to the first. So the first one is called XES. So the word sex backwards. Mm-hmm. And that's only because my husband begged me to not call it hot, holy, and horizontal. Never sell. Do not name it that. So he came up with, well, what about XES? And I said, but that's backwards. And I realized, gosh, that's exactly the problem because the subtitle is Why Church Girls Tend to Get It Backwards and How to Get It Right.
Okay.
And so that was really a message that had, it evolved in so many ways from a very, very broken, messy teenage journey.
Okay.
That then led me, when we moved to the States, I thought, great, you know, I can start over. Nobody knows about this crazy life that I have led. I can just be who I'm supposed to be, you know, start over. Mm-hmm. And so I got very good at pretending. I was the good Christian girl. I was the youth leader. I worked in Christian radio. I just started over, kind of assuming that I could bury everything and not deal with it and that it wouldn't affect me. And it just slowly devoured me from the inside. It was like I had given the enemy this, you know, free ticket to destroy me because nobody knew. And I just brave-faced it. And so for 7 years, I was just carrying secrets about promiscuity and shoplifting.
Did your husband know?
No. Well, I wasn't married at the time.
Okay.
Yeah. But I was, when we moved to the States second time, I was 16. So yeah. And I was date raped at 15. And this was just kind of a piece that was sort of the final straw where, you know, after somewhat of a pockmarked sexual childhood because of stuff that had happened when I was younger and just didn't have all the pieces of the puzzle to be able to know what it was, just something wasn't right. Yeah. I was fighting tooth and nail as, you know, a good Christian girl to hold onto my virginity because it was this holy grail, you know. Yeah. So much of our value and our virtue was attached to our virginity. And so when that was taken from me, there was a sense of, well, there's nothing left.
Yeah.
That's good or sacred in me. So what is the point of saying no?
Wow, it's so logical as a conclusion.
As a broken 15-year-old with no self-worth whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my response to that was just to throw myself at anything that would hold my hand and tell me I was pretty.
Okay.
Which made for a very rough few years. And so I got into shoplifting. I probably started when I was much younger, but it was this very ugly few years. And then we moved here and it was a fresh start. But so then I tried to do this, you know, I'm going to earn my way back into God's favor. And so I'm going to do all the performance stuff. I'm going to be a really good Christian. And then I met this really good Christian guy and knew if he knew anything about my past, he would not give me a second glance.
So you have a quote, fresh start, but with no healing.
Oh my goodness, no.
Yeah.
None whatsoever.
Okay.
And it just compounded. You know, I went from wearing a mask of I'm tough, you can't hurt me, you know, I'm a good girl. Please love me, please accept me. I'm a good Christian girl. Yeah, so my book, XES, was really a response to bringing a lot of baggage into my marriage because my hubby actually only found out about it 2 months before we got married.
Okay. How did he find out? You told him or he discovered it?
He did. I was working in Christian radio at the time and I was out at a media event in New York was 22 at the time and was just, you know, happy as a lark, front row with my media pass hanging from my neck, thinking I was the bee's knees. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd had breakfast with Jeremy Kemp that morning and Toby Mac, and
that's too shabby.
Life is grand. And then, and then a purity advocate came out onto the stage, Pam Stenzel.
Okay.
And she proceeded to, you know, inform, it felt like just me, that when you get married, you need to build a relationship on full disclosure.
Okay.
And that honesty is so huge. And so there was just this sense of feeling like the world was falling out from underneath me, because I was getting married in 2 months and my fiance knew none of this. I had told him, he had actually identified shame.
Okay.
When he had asked me, he had told me he was a virgin and he could see flickers of something. And so he questioned me about it. Uh-huh. So I told him the poor me part. I told him I was date raped.
Okay.
So I figured at least he knew I would come with baggage.
Okay.
But I didn't tell him the bad me part, all the stuff I did in response to that. And so, you know, the sin of omission.
Yeah.
I had just gone, okay, well, he knows as little as he needs to know that I'm banged up and we're going to have some work to do. And I thought that that would be okay, that I was saving him and saving myself. And I'd actually convinced myself to some degree that some of it had not happened.
Okay.
I've become so good at pretending.
Wow. What was that like, that conversation, like right before it?
Oh, with me and him?
Yeah.
Oh, probably in the top two most uncomfortable conversations or days of my life. And God had made it so clear. I was, I've got to tell you the amazing Jehovah sneaky part, because God is just very sneaky.
Okay.
But, so I had said, I had made this deal with God that, okay, I get the point. I understand that you're giving me an opportunity of a lifetime and I have to act within the lifetime of this opportunity. Okay. So if you let me speak to Pam Stenzel, who is the speaker,
okay,
you know, this is the conversation I'm having, and she tells me I have to tell him, I'll do it.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
Right. So, you know, everyone can just laugh because our plans, you know, of course, pale.
Yeah.
And so I stood on the outskirts of the prayer tent, because the prayer tent was flooded. I mean, we have so much sexual baggage, but everyone just walks around as if, you know, we have it together. And so I thought, okay, well, you know, I'm on the outside and I will never get to her. And I turned around to walk away thinking, well, that is, I won. And she was standing behind me.
Oh my gosh.
I have no idea how he pulled it off, but she was right behind me. And so I basically poured out my heart to her with much snot and tears. And she said, you're right. You're absolutely right that this gentle conviction you feel is the Lord giving you an opportunity to start this right. And so she prayed with me and encouraged me to, you know, this was ultimately going to be the best thing, as much as I thought, just kill me now.
Yeah.
And so I drove back to Michigan the next day and waited in the apartment that he had rented, that he was staying at until we got married and I would move in with him. And, oh, Emily, you know, I can say it now with a smile on my face because there's 13 years of distance between that day and now, but I couldn't look at him in the eyes because there was such an awareness of the fact that I had betrayed him and that I had lied to him. You know, I can say I had left out details, but I lied to him for the extent of our relationship, and I had allowed him to believe I was someone I wasn't. And I knew that there would be a huge gaping hole in the trust department. So I gave him his ring back.
Oh, you were ending it?
Well, I think that that was my way of almost like a preemptive thing, that if I give it back to you, then you won't ask me for it, and that might be less painful.
Okay.
But I was dreading he would ask me how many there had been, and he did. And I felt like I at least owed him that.
Okay.
And of course, could not make eye contact. I mean, it was just, I literally felt like I had dirt caked on my face, like all the filth of years and years of, you know, living this life. And then the years of hiding it was just manifested on my face. And and so I could not look at him. And so I assumed the fetal position on the bathroom floor. Just begging that the Lord would, you know, if you just took me home now, I would not have to live another minute with what I've done. And he was just shell-shocked. I had become so good at pretending. I think there was a sense of almost, he was just reeling. He didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much time passed. It felt like years. Maybe it was just half an hour. But there was much weeping and I'm sure gnashing of teeth. And he eventually walked over to the bathroom and picked me up and forced me to look at him. Like, I had to physically shift my chin up to make eye contact with him. And then he got down on his knee and he asked me to marry him again. And,
wow.
You know, I've grown up in the church, but that was the first day I understood the gospel.
Yeah, that is just the picture of Christ right there,
yes,
isn't it?
It wrecked me in the most profound, beautiful ways, because it what he was saying was, I see you. I see the ugly. I see the broken, and I still want you. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the first time I fully, I don't know if I'll ever fully, but really began to comprehend grace and and God's heart for us. And so, I mean, we had a messy road to walk through with the first few years of marriage. We've had so much baggage to walk through, which is part of what gave birth to the book. Mm. But the next day I sat on my mom's lap and wept and told her, because nobody knew.
Okay.
You know, my oldest sister knew some of it, but it was because she was already the black sheep of the family and she was the only safe person to.
Might as well tell her.
Right. And so, you know, she was living the same life. And, you know, so there was just a lot of freedom suddenly of, oh my goodness, I felt like a 1,000-pound weight had been lifted off me. Mm. You could not pay me to live another day in those years of hiding and the fear, the paranoia of being found out after you've woven a web of lies. Yeah. I mean, it was just, but that was how I functioned.
And you don't even know how not free you are.
No, until I actually was free. And then I felt like I could shout it from the rooftops. And, you know, obviously not initially. I had to process a lot. And and so that was 2 months before we got married. And then just before we got married, I got really, really sick of this the symptoms I'd never had before. We went through 2 rounds of antibiotics. Nothing could touch it. Did what no smart person should do, but we probably do. All of us. I WebMD'd it.
Nope, not a good idea.
I know. Every time it came up as HIV, and there was this sense.
Oh my gosh.
I really feel like it was the Lord allowing me to see another layer of me mistrusting him, because my immediate response was, I knew you were going to get me. I knew this would catch up with me. Like Jehovah Zappa would get me for what I had done. Like you would dangle this carrot of, okay, this guy really loves you. Just kidding. Mm-hmm. And so I actually went and got tested because I felt like I had to, you know, and I come from the country where HIV is rampant, you know? And so in a sense, it felt like, well, this would make sense. I deserved this. And so it was really just another layer of God exposing faulty thinking and a very broken image of who he was in my life, because then it was just gone. I woke up one day, it was gone.
The sickness
was gone. So
oh my goodness.
I don't know if it was just the enemy going, you know, let's try one more time, or whether it was the Lord just allowing me to kind of have one more layer of healing in my walk with him.
That was a major 2 months. You're supposed to be planning your flowers and your dress, and you were doing a lot of things.
HIV testing and pouring out my heart.
Wow. Okay. So that, I'm assuming, is what kind of birthed in you this desire to have other women be free.
Oh, very much. Very much. Because as I started to share my story, women would come out weeping saying, that's my story, but no one talks about this. Yeah. You know, I couldn't believe, I even had women that were in their 70s or 80s at ladies' teas saying, that happened to me, but I've carried it all these years.
Wow.
There's so much shame and so much, you know, we don't talk about sex typically in the church. I think that we're moving into a new age of where it's becoming more of a acceptable topic for pastors to preach on. But it was almost like, you know, the world is screaming, woo, sex, and the church is going, this is uncomfortable. We don't talk about that here.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
Yes.
We're not sure how we got here because we don't have sex.
Exactly. And I think that was a part of what plummeted me into the mud the way it did, was because the sense of, like, all I knew was don't. But then what happens when that happens? And then all you go is, well, I'm used goods. There's no hope for me. And so there was this bubbling, I don't want to say anger because that's too strong of a word, but there was this incredible need, to kind of crack this open and say, we need to talk about this, because if our Father created this and it was his gift to us, shouldn't Christians be having the best sex possible?
Yes.
Why are we getting, you know, these two-dimensional leftovers while the world has all the fun and we're all too embarrassed to talk about it? And there's an epidemic of sexless marriages because we're so banged up. But no one wants to talk about it. Yeah. And so for me, sharing my testimony at different women's events, because I've been speaking since I worked in radio, so it's been 15 years, that became my most popular topic, was to talk about, you know, share my testimony, and then this whole, like, reclaim, Christians need to reclaim this, you know? Mm-hmm. I had read Pam Farrell's book, Red Hot Monogamy.
Okay.
And that kind of triggered this whole like, yes, you know. So I wrote this blog post, this 20-page blog post that took a year to write because I was too terrified to share it. And then when I did, it was the most popular one on my blog. And so now it was like, would you come and do the spicy talk?
Okay.
And so then that became the most popular talk, which then evolved into this book of why is the church mom on this? Because God is not.
That's true.
You know, God dedicated a whole book to this. So why is the church letting this get swept under the rug? And so many marriages hurting and so many women. I mean, my hubby and I have done marriage mentoring for quite some time and we love it because we've walked with couples through affairs, through just all sorts of stuff. And because we're an open book, we both have our own fair share of junk that we brought in. It's been really amazing to see God use our brokenness and the very things that I thought would be the death of me if people knew, mm-hmm. you know, the source of such great shame.
Yeah.
And to think, gosh, the enemy was just trying to keep that under wraps because look how powerful it is. Is when you say, okay, God, here's my junk, use it. And he makes something amazing out of it.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's talk about that. So women who are just under the shame and maybe they don't even know what it is, but they just feel like they're under something. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they know exactly what it is. And they, like you, feel like they would basically rather die than somebody know about it. I mean, you've seen it. I've seen it. When you open it up, God will flip it on its head and turn beauty for ashes. It's so exciting to be on the other side of it. Mm-hmm. But when you're the woman who's stuck and who's not free, what would you say, like, how can she cross that divide?
Mm-hmm. I guess the first thing that I would say is that, you know, it seems that the dark is safer. Mm. Like, I understand as someone who hid in the dark, I get that. It feels like that's safer for you, but it's not. When we leave stuff at hiding, we've basically given the enemy free rein to torment us. But when we bring stuff out into the light, as terrifying as that is, and it's a slow process. I mean, God is so kind. It's not this like, bam, slice the onion down the middle. It's the slow process of peeling layer by layer. And there are times that I've said, God, why don't you heal me faster? Like, why don't you do this faster? Deliver me from this, this agony of this discomfort or this baggage, this broken way of seeing things. And the Lord has just said, I will not deliver you from it, but I will deliver you through it if you walk with me. Mm. Like each step, just keep leaning into me. Because if he snaps his fingers and just takes it all away, then how do we walk with other people?
It's true.
You know? Yeah. And so I would say the Lord wants your healing more than you do, that Jesus paid a high price for your freedom, that believing the lie that the dark is safer just delights the enemy and breaks the Father's heart because that is not the abundant life that he sent his son for us to live. So I would encourage a woman to really ask the Lord to bring alongside a mentor figure that they can walk through this with, because you need to have someone speaking when you cannot see who you are and your value and the good because you're faced with all the ugly. Mm. All you can see is the ugly. You need somebody to call that out in you, you know, to find somebody who sees the gold in you. And so that when all you see is the dirt, they can say, no, this is what I see. And you keep going one more step. You know, just even last year, I started seeing a counselor, which seems bizarre.
Okay.
Because, you know, this was so many years ago that we dealt with this. But one of my mentors, we were sitting on the beach and she said, honey, this is bigger than me. You know, I think you need to go see Carol.
That's wisdom, you know?
Oh, it was. And it was amazing. You know, I'd never formally gone to see a professional counselor. And I'm a big proponent for everyone having a counselor because it was so healing and so redemptive and so just, it was freeing to just be able to sit down and be a hot mess and say, this is what I'm processing. And then, you know, after a couple months, she said, okay, I think you're good. You know, let's just do this as needed basis. You let me know when you need me.
I think that's good because I think sometimes we assume, well, if I go to counseling, I'm going to be in counseling till I'm 85. And I am the person who has a counselor and can't do anything without saying, well, let me see what my therapist says about this. And it's not true.
No.
It can be for a season and it can be incredibly helpful.
Very enriching. Yeah.
Now, you told me that a verse that you love in the midst of a struggle is Deuteronomy 31:8. And I'm going to read it because it's so exactly what you were just talking about. The Lord himself goes before you. He will be with you. He will never leave you or forsake you. Don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged. I just think we feel like on Titanic, there's like the girl who's on the front of the boat. Like, I don't know, sometimes we feel like we're going first into uncharted territories, and that's just not true.
Absolutely.
He goes before us.
And the other verse that I had mentioned is so, such a powerful reminder. It was Isaiah 43, and I think I'd written all of it.
You put all of it,
because there's this theme of, you know, when you go through the rivers, the water will not overcome you. And when you go through the fire, you will not be burned. And there isn't this if you do, it's when you do. Mm. So we're going to walk through it, but he will be with us. And I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. And, you know, I will bring streams in the wastelands. And I mean, there's just so much redemption and newness. It was like that verse, the whole of Isaiah 43 was my anthem, you know, during those seasons of going, God, who, I need you to tell me who I am because I've been listening to lies for too long.
Yeah. Okay. So what would you say to a mom who feels like she's struggling with uncovering those dreams and that purpose? Obviously, she can call you.
Or order my second book. I mean,
order the second book. Okay, so tell us about the second book.
So the second book just came out in April. It's called Panduka.
Okay.
And which is a delightfully unusual word. But it's
tell
actually
me about the word.
It's Oshi Herero for wake up. That's one of the tribal languages from Namibia.
I don't even know what you just said. Okay.
Oshi Herero. So it's the language spoken by the Herero people in Namibia. And so it means wake up. The anthem of Panduka was this wake up call to the souls of women to say, God has deposited a piece of who he is in you. And it's your job to spend your life breathing it out.
It makes it like a treasure hunt.
Yes, yes. Life is this amazing treasure hunt. I actually just read a quote recently that said, if the Christian life is boring, you've either fulfilled your mission or you've lost your vision.
Huh,
and I think, I think that was Chris Vallotton who had said that. But so that was what this was this call to say, who are you? Why are you here? And then I got to put my coaching hat on for the third section and say, and what are you going to do about it? Like, let's put some skin in the game, you know, because we can read great books and go, well, that was good. And we can walk away. But what are you going to do with it?
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
Thank you. Oh, it's so exciting. It has been a wild adventure. And it's been fun getting to hear stories back from women. I mean, even one of the ladies on my launch team, within a couple weeks of her reading it, so the book hadn't actually come out yet, she messaged me and said, I have been in love with the idea of photography for so long, but I haven't known what to do. And she said, as I'm reading through this and doing the, because there's a study guide that goes with it. She said, I just bought a camera and I've started a nonprofit and I'm going to do photography for people who are in the later stages of their life, but not quite at the end, because too often there's this, oh, now grandma is so old and so frail and we don't have pictures of us together because she's really unhealthy.
Oh, that's true. You don't want to remember her that way or whatever.
Yes. And so capturing these candid moments kind of as a loved one is kind of getting to the stage where they're beginning to fade, but then there's no regret, you know, and they're not posed and they're not, but she was just lit. And it was so exciting to see her on fire of, you know, as a mom of four little ones to say, I found something that's not just mommy that gets me excited.
That's beautiful. I love her insight into the importance of having those pictures, but then also to awaken that in herself. That's awesome.
That was so fun.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. So where can people get your books?
On Amazon.
Okay.
Online on Barnes & Noble. And then also I have an online shop called simplybloomshop.org.
Okay. And what do you sell?
I have lots of prints because I'm a graphic designer. I get to make all my own fun stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So I have prints and mugs. I have a couple t-shirts, but they're specifically Panduka t-shirts. They're gold foil and they're so pretty. I do occasionally have pendants, but I'm all out. So my shop is sort of cleaned out because we just had a big speaking thing happen a couple weeks ago.
It's a good problem to have.
It's a wonderful problem. So fall, it'll be all restocked. But yes, my books are available through simplybloomshop.org as well.
Okay. Okay. So tell me, as a mom who's struggling to find the thing or find herself underneath all the shame, what would your encouragement be to her?
I would say that if there's a sense of hopelessness, that you're listening to the wrong voice. If there's any element of fear, whether it's fear of screwing up your kids or fear of it's too late or anything. I mean, it's amazing once we identify fear, how huge fear is.
Yeah,
that we have given the enemy room. And so I think so often just tuning into what is it that I'm believing right now? Because our feelings are always a product of our thought life. You know, that's where it starts. And so going back, and I try to do this a lot with myself, is just, this is how I'm feeling. There's shame or there's the sense of foolishness, or so what are you feeling? And I trace that back to, what are you thinking and what are you believing about who you are? What are you believing about who God is for you? Mm-hmm. And I think when we can start to choose, even if we don't feel like it's right, like, you know, when you to look in the mirror and say, I am beloved and God has a plan for me, you may not believe it. Mm-hmm. But sometimes there's that, you have to speak it out. Action often has to take place before we believe it. And so just to start evaluating, what is it that you're believing? What are the lies that you're believing? And when you can start to weed through the lies that the enemy has just kind of scattered, and then we almost nurture it and we allow it to thrive when we should be like, hypervigilant.
Get out of here.
Yes, we should be, you know, just chronically weeding our heart gardens and saying, yep, that's a lie. Yep, that's a lie. And so whenever there's a sense of defeat, and I still struggle with this, I'll stop and go, what am I believing? What am I choosing to believe about my situation, about my kids, about my future? And then if it doesn't line up with hope, I'm believing a lie. Somewhere. And then, okay, Lord, where is that lie? And so it's kind of going back to the root. Okay, take me back. Let's go one more. Because I think when we understand that God wants us to be free.
Yeah.
You know, that He wants our freedom more than we do. Then there's almost this like righteous anger that when we believe the lies and we fall prey and we're stuck there, I think there's this kind of like, you know, we get mad at the enemy, which then fuels us to want to change it and say, I'm not giving you another minute of this day. I don't want to give you another moment of my life to rule.
Yeah. It reminds me of my 4-year-old. He's constantly walking around in full body armor with a sword, you know, and like the breastplate, and he's got the helmet. And I mean, he's like the passage in the Bible that just says, put on your armor. Like that's what he is. And like, and if I try to correct him on something, he pulls a sword on me. It's not a good idea. It's not smart. But it reminds me of that. Like, we ought to just be like, that's it.
Yes. Yeah. We need to get a little royally ticked off.
Yeah.
You know, that we have an enemy encroaching on our freedom and just refuse to go back into captivity.
Oh, man, Joy. So good. I have one more question for you.
Okay.
What can you not stop talking about right now? People wish you'd just shut up and just can't.
Oh, this is going to be embarrassing.
Say it.
Okay. All right. So I have sort of always wanted to be a mermaid.
Okay.
And that's just not possible. But I've also always wanted.
I'm so sorry to tell you.
I know. It's tragic. but I have also always wanted to be a trapeze artist. And so there's this, whenever I go to the circus, I see these women in silk, like falling from the sky in silk wrapped up. And I think, oh, if I could live a different life, I would be like one of those girls in silk, because it's like you get to do all the fun, graceful things of mermaids and you sort of get to feel like you fly. And so I discovered a few months ago, maybe even a year ago, that there was a thing called aerial yoga.
I've seen it, but I never knew what to call it. So I never knew how to look for it. So when you said you loved it, I was so excited to hear more about it.
The only problem is all those graceful images I had of myself have yet to actually become a reality, because I feel more like a floundering porpoise in a fishing net. There is just nothing pretty about it. So it's just,
so are you taking classes or how are you doing this?
I'm not doing it in public. No. In fact, I have not. I refuse to let even my children or my husband see me just yet, because it might just crush my soul.
Okay, so it's at your house. You have some sort of silk hanging or what? How does that work?
Yes. Well, it's not all the time, because my children will play at it. But we have a massive eyelet hook in our ceiling, in our family room ceiling, that we put up for the TRX year ago. Do you know what a TRX is?
I have no idea.
Okay, it's one of those suspension workout systems where you use your body weight.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of gyms will have them where they have those big, like, yellow straps hanging from the ceiling. And then you do push-ups and pull-ups and put your feet in them. And so my hubby had gotten one because with physical therapy for his back, they had said, well, this is really good. So we put this huge beam up in our attic to support this hook. And so I was looking at the hook a few months ago and thought,
oh, yeah, hang from that.
I could fly in silk from now. Oh, yeah, good. And so my birthday was last month. So I got an aerial yoga rig for my birthday.
I love that.
Ah, oh, thank you. I'm pretty geeked and devastated all at the same time because it just reality did not line thought? Up. Yes, I'm getting okay. old. Things don't well, move okay. the way aren't they used all? To.
Well, yes, we don't need to focus on that. No. Okay, we need to focus on something more
positive.
But
I'm going to cling to hope.
What's going well? Cling to hope.
Not going to believe the lies. But yes, yeah, so I'm going to keep pushing through because I thought, you know, I took my first dance class at 25. I can learn aerial yoga at 35.
Where do you learn it from? Who do you?
YouTube, the University of YouTube.
I love it.
That's where cute. I learn everything else.
Okay. Wow. Well, that's so fun. I'm excited. And I'm going to go to university when we get off the phone. And I want to know about this.
Yes. Look up aerial yoga or yoga hammock would be another description.
Okay. I love it.
And when I get good, I will send you a picture.
I don't believe that you will if you're not even doing it in front of your husband, but I appreciate you saying that. And I would love a picture.
You don't believe that I will send you a picture or that I will get good? Because I just want to clarify.
No, I don't believe before I take... send a picture. I believe that you'll get good. I believe you'll get good.
Right lighting and good editing, we could make it look good.
It's true. Wow, Joy, what a pleasure to talk with you. I didn't know you at all, and I think you're pretty fantastic.
Thank you. It was such a treat to be here.
Yeah, yay. Well, you enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you so much. You too.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Wasn't that good? I loved how she mentioned that healing is slow. I do not love that healing is slow, but it's an encouragement when it doesn't seem like we're changing at all, that God is at work. It's just going to take some time. Just like the Colorado River took a long time to carve the Grand Canyon. Just like it's taking a long time for my kids to figure out where is the dishwasher located. It's a slow process, apparently. So, you guys, what will your strategy to struggle well be this week? Maybe you need to crawl out from under the weight of some shame and bring your past into the light. Tell a trusted friend or your spouse, and don't let the enemy have another minute of your day. I loved what Joy said a couple of times about drawing the gold out of people. Maybe you can find some people this week and tell them about the gold that you see in them. Maybe your kids, maybe your husband. I also really identified with what she said about how we sometimes accidentally nurture the enemy's lies instead of uprooting them in our lives. Maybe you spend some time with the Lord this week, specifically talking about the lies that you're believing, and pull those things out, man. Get them out of your life. Maybe this week you go to the University of YouTube, as Joy called it, and get started on some aerial yoga. And also, if you do that, please document it. I want to see it. I'm still waiting on a picture from Joy, by the way. So, all right, guys. Thanks for listening. I hope you learned as much as I did. You can go ahead and find the show notes and everywhere to find Joy at momstrugglingwell.com. And come on over to Instagram on Wednesday nights, where we talk about how our day went during Struggle Well Wednesday. Y'all, I'm thankful for you, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I hope you have a great week of struggling well.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.